Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan.
Welcome to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know if you join us on a regular basis, today you know that call-in number is 646-668-2948. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and welcome to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. And then you know if you're doing this on a regular basis, you know the slogan for the show: if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, is an economic blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation and design companies. To address the effect of higher energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize Black-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young Black men and women locally and nationally, also to educate the Black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the Black community through radio programs such as Solar Now in the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. It's also brought to you by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSHBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. And you know, ladies and gentlemen, if you've been following us on a regular basis, you know that we always attempt here to bring you news that you can definitely use. Well, today's date, ladies and gentlemen, is February. We've already jumped the whole month of February. It's March the 4th, 2020. And you know, we are in the midst of a very, very heated election primary season. And as you know, you and many others, you have been hiding up on the rock, and I doubt there's any rocks you can hide under right now. If you even under rock, the snail even got the message that the African American vote has basically saved candidate Biden, Joseph Biden, who without the endorsement of the senator, congressman from Sumter, South Carolina, African-American congressman from South Carolina, that and my home state taking the lead in getting Joe Biden through that specific primary in the state of South Carolina, which he won, very, very, very clear that set the tone for what was to come on yesterday. Now, after receiving all of the support that he has received from the African-American community, the question comes down to what is in it for the African-American community on a national basis as it relates to renewable energy, policies around energy, and when we begin to deal with the issue of regulated and deregulated markets, which I realize that is outside of the policy premise of the president's office, but the president sets the tone. 45 clearly showed that when he came into office and he withdrew from the Paris Accords. And we have talked about that. We have looked at the fact that he's called global warming a hoax, his administration. And we know that we are in some serious, serious times when you're looking at here in the DMV, Washington, Baltimore metropolitan area. We really didn't have any winter. It is now March. And it came in like a lamb. I don't know if it'll go out the same way, but we know we may be in for some tumultuous weather terms as we look at the impact of the hurricanes that are ravaging the South. And our prayers go out to the folks in Nashville, Tennessee. And if you have been following that incident, they talked about the damage in Nashville, but nobody said anything about Tennessee State University. So I am very, I don't know in terms of, I know that the death count now is up around 25 people who have unfortunately perished in that storm that hit, tornado that hit the other night, in the middle of the night, and it did tremendous damage to homes and property. But I'm hoping that none of the students at Tennessee State University were among those casualties from that storm. So we wanted to open the show up and look at what is going on as it relates to the comprehensive Senate bill, Senate energy bill, and the bill in the House, which they're supposed to be working on a comprehensive energy bill. So we're going to look at that. We're going to drill down on that, and we're going to sort of put this whole political piece platform, because there has been little or nothing talked about in terms of policy. This whole election is based upon almost trying to elevate these politicians to rock star status. And when we begin to talk about our local politicians, it's like if so-and-so endorses so-and-so, then everybody's going to go out and vote for that specific candidate. I don't know. I still say the things are out on that, because when we begin to really drill down and look at the policies as it relates to the Sunshine Identity Initiative, which was the biggest thing that President Barack Obama did during his initiative, there has not been any great benefits that have come to the African-American community. When we begin to look at the large amount of workforce development funding, and I'm speaking specifically to the issue of the Department of Energy here in Washington, D.C., and specifically the state of Maryland where I reside, I was able to learned from the Assistant Secretary of the Department of Labor here in Maryland, Mr. James Rakowski, that the state of Maryland will receive $110 million for this fiscal year starting July 1. But the state legislature, which is predominantly a Democratic legislature here in the state of Maryland, has only programmed $8 million to be spent for workforce development. And when we look at that issue on workforce development, and we look at the fact that you only have two pilot programs in the whole state of Maryland. One is run by Mr. Eli Allen of Civic Works, who's the director, and the other program is run by Mrs. Sherry Brooks of the Power 52 organization, who have workforce development training programs to train young African Americans from impoverished and what we call the downtown communities, which we know in Baltimore City. And when we look at getting these opportunities and these workforce development training programs, and we're talking about the cost of about $10,000 for each student's or individuals that is selected for one of these programs. And normally they try to start a program with at least 30 students. And if you're talking about a 6 month program, you're talking about just to train 60 people, you're talking about $600,000 a year. Now, I have reached out to a number of our legislative leaders. I've reached out to one of our area HBCUs in terms of developing a workforce development training program. But one of the problems that we have with a Democratic Senate and House in the state of Maryland is that after people vote, their basic needs, programs, a lot of these things go, they're unfunded mandates, and they don't happen. So I'm trying to see what's in the pipeline for the African American community in regulated states when these markets need to be deregulated, and what type of programs will be looked at after as it relates to the African American community getting their fair share of those contracts that keep business going. See, it's one thing for people to always run to the black community and put the onus on the black community as though we should be the saviors of everything going and everybody. But that is not necessarily the case. We see in a lot of situations where we are put on the back burner after voting. These politicians show up at our churches. They show up and they shake some hands. They skin and they grin. And the only people that they will be back in contact will be those black so-called elected officials. And they take that as a status symbol rather than delivering anything to our communities. Now, I can speak truth to power on this issue because I went through this right here in Prince George's County, Maryland. There was a transitioning neighborhood initiative which was supposed to provide a $10,000 grant for Maryland residents who would meet the 60% area median income. Well, in fact, me and my wife do meet that. She's retired from Howard University, retired PhD from Howard University after working 40 years. Well, all those initials behind your name has nothing to do with your income once you retire. It's still fixed income. So we meet that criteria, and we suffer from one of those diseases that most baby boomers in this Baltimore, Washington market area, a lot of us, it's called they're grown, but they haven't gone. So that means that your son and your daughter may have moved back in with one of your grandchildren or several of your grandchildren. So those utility bills are through the sky, through the roof, because you are providing a household for a growing family, and you have basically three generations in one home. This plays out in the Washington-Baltimore metropolitan area, but I'm quite sure it's playing out all over this country right now. Regardless of how people look at the procurement of purchasing homes, careers and income levels for the last 30 years in this country have not kept pace with the living and everything else. Everything else has grown except people's income. And when you're talking about a candidate that you can brand, and that's basically what they put the label on Bernie Sanders, oh, he's a socialist. Well, the bottom line is, you ever heard of Social Security? Most of the programs that we pay into is our money, but to get it back, somebody can put a label on it, call it socialism, and if somebody says, well, health care for all, and it's an entitlement, I am not, quote unquote, I am a registered independent. I am not a Bernie Sanders. I may vote for him in this coming election. I have to see where he stands and what his policies are on not just climate change, but where is the economic equity in the return on our political vote and empowering these elected politicians from the president's office all the way down to the city council when it comes to delivering something for you. And this is what happened in Prince George's County. I contacted we don't have a mayor. In Prince George's County, we have a county executive, which just changed hands. I contacted the prior administration and this administration. The head of the Department of Sustainability in Prince George's County, when I put this issue to him, why would you put a program out here on your website if you don't live in zip code 207? You cannot even apply for the program. Well, we meet the area median income. We're in the same market demographics, but our zip code happened to be 209. So we weren't able even to apply for the program. Now that the program is there's no funding for that program any longer. It went away. But I know that I came on this platform and we beat the drum around this issue of why are Prince George's County residents able to apply for a program that your tax dollars have paid for because you don't live in zip code 207. Now, when I approached our local county city council person, her response was, that's the way they did it. Well, what did you do when they was doing that? Where were you when they were doing that? I don't want to hear any excuses. Folks use these positions in the black community as a job to economically empower themselves. They don't bring a hell of a lot back to the communities that they represent. We have very, very small turnouts, and they like it like that because that way they can ensure they get 2,000 or 3,000 votes, they're back in office. This is what has played out in Prince George's County. I've watched this time and time again. With all of the different issues that we talk about in the renewable energy industry, same thing is playing out in Washington, D.C., with under Mayor Bowser's administration with the Solar for All program. The administration there in the Department of Energy and Environment, because there is over $1.3 billion worth of infrastructure, renewable energy, green infrastructure projects over the next 10 years. The director of the Department of Energy and Environment in Washington, D.C., Mr. Tommy Wells, petitioned the Public Service Commission to raise $105 million to capitalize a green bank. Well, to quote unquote be able to leverage private investment dollars that are coming in to this renewable energy industry, looking at the transportation bill where you have a $11 billion, $1 billion for electric vehicle infrastructure. I'm looking at all of this money being spent. But when you begin to drill down on this thing and look at the fact out over 9,000 solar installation and design companies in the United States of America doing business, we have less than 30. Truly, this organization was founded to try to build a collaboration with our historically black colleges, to partner with our black African-American-owned solar installation and design companies. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to sit behind this mic and tell a lie to nobody. This has been a very, very difficult journey over the last 4 years. Our folks don't really miss the bigger picture. Everything starts with energy. Everything ends with energy. And when you look at all these billionaires who are in this game of politics, many of them are heavily invested in utilities. So we understand how this game is played. What we don't understand is why the African American media has not educated our community around the issues when we look at the fact that all of those southern states that put Biden over the top are regulated markets. And let me make it plain what that means. It means that in the North Carolinas and Virginias and South Carolina, Duke Energy and Old Dominion, they control the generation of energy, the transmission of energy to the price of energy. In deregulated markets, you have competition. You have advocacy groups. When you begin to look at the advocacy side of all of the thousands of NGOs and nonprofit organizations that have popped up that are supposed to be advocating on behalf of low and moderate income communities of color, very few folks who look like me have a voice in the policy side of anything. You go to these conferences, they got their agenda set, what they're going to talk about. They talk about you, they don't talk to you, and they don't know what your needs or wants are. These are the issues that I'm bringing up on this platform, solar now and the future and the economic impact on Black America. That this sets the tone for me to go right into what our lead today, and it speaks to that. Comprehensive Senate energy bill draws in the industry bipartisan support, but lags on tax credits and efficiency. This is an article that was written by Catherine Morehouse. It was published on March 3rd, 2020 in an outstanding online blog called Utility Dive. The bill would include 17 demonstration projects for advanced nuclear carbon capture, long-duration storage, and geothermal, moving away from the Trump administration more research-focused funding. Now, as we are speaking today, the House and Senate is working on supposedly working on this, what they call energy bill. Comprehensive Senate energy package has a better chance than most energy bills of getting through Congress, according to policy watchers. But opposition from groups opposed to its inclusion of fossil fuels and the exclusion of tax credits for renewables and electric vehicles may present challenges. I guess it does present challenges. If you have taken away the $7,500 federal tax credit, no money was put in the budget for that, how many African Americans who make under $30,000 you think qualified to buy a brand new Tesla or even a Chevy Volt? I can tell you what that answer is. Or Nissan Leaf? Slim and none. And Slim left the building a long time ago before none arrived. This is what I'm talking about, ladies and gentlemen. They never had any tax credit for secondary market vehicles, which is known as used cars. When we begin to look at what is a parent going to do sending their kids to school, if everything is switching over in a paradigm shift in this transportation model, young people don't have the money to buy no cars in school, so who goes on the hook for that? Their parents. Well, if the parent doesn't have the resources to do this, and in the African-American community, this is an issue, credit. When we look at different platforms, one Bernie Sanders had, which I think is a hell of an idea to put a cap on the interest rates on these damn credit cards. I mean, when you get even the loan shark in the street didn't charge no more back in the day than 25 cents on the dollar. This is just to get a piece of plastic to go around to get your money, utilize your money in your bank account, or give you some credit. So everybody's hustling John Doe Q. But those who have the least, and the least of us who worked all our lives and never really made that much in the first place, and you had to do what? Raise a family in a market like the Baltimore, Washington metropolitan area, brother. I don't have to speak. Everybody, if you live here, you know what I'm talking about. Now, let's look at this bill. The bill next text was unveiled Thursday by the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Chair, Senator Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, and Ranking Member Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia, which includes 555 pages that combine almost 50 energy bills reported by the Senate in 2019 and address everything from nuclear to carbon capture and renewables. The comprehensive bill represents critical federal aid to power the sector faced with the Herculean task of mid-century decarbonization, according to supporters, and its bipartisan backing presents a rare opportunity to modernize the federal energy policy, which hasn't been updated in such a broad manner since the Energy Independence and Security Act was passed in 2007. That's 13 years ago, ladies and gentlemen. The bill's prospect in the House appears positive as well, but there are reservations. Partisan overlap on policies around energy storage, carbon capture, nuclear, and renewables already exist in the House. Staff from the House Science and Space Technology Committees and Senate said during the February webinar hosted by the Center on Climate Change and Energy Solutions. Now, there is a live link. Once you log on to our website at positivechangepc.com, go over to our News and Events tab, scroll down, you'll see the title. When you go down, you'll see a blue, the script will be blue, highlighted in blue. That means it's a live link. You can click on that. It will take you directly into that webinar. There's a strong foundation to work within the terms of getting something to the House floor and then to the president's desk. Brad Towson, Managing Director of Strategic Initiatives and CE Toll Utility died, but critics note that its clean energy and climate policy does not go nearly far enough, and the provisions that would explain mining could undermine any environmental process the bill might otherwise make. The environmental and energy efficiency groups have been the biggest opponents. The bill includes a number of small bore proposals, some productive and some determinal. It also incorporates some egregious non-starters, such as provisions to vastly expand permitting of the destruction of mining operations, as well as expanding fracking gas exports. The Sierra Club Legislative Director Melinda Pierce said in the statement, man, this is, when you read this, you understand that the gas and oil lobby is all over this, that bill on that hill. Bringing exclusive dispatchable zero carbon resources to the scale. The focus on getting zero emissions dispatch technologies to scale is one of the most critical issues facing the power sector, the utility executives have noted. As the sector embraces increasing ambitious carbon-free electric goals, it is banking on one or more of these potential technologies reaching commercial scale, whether that be hydrogen, advanced nuclear, carbon capture, long-term duration, energy storage, or a combination of them all. I don't understand why in the hell Congress would not extend the 30% investment tax credit for people to put a solar PV system on their roofs. It started depreciating in 2019. It dropped January 1, 2020, it dropped the depreciation of the tax credit dropped from 30% to 22% for this year, 2020. Next year, it drops to 20%. And according to what we see here, there is no provisions to extend this federal tax credit for investment tax credit for people to put solar system, which is known as PV system, on their rooftops of their homes. This, to me, ladies and gentlemen, is something that people need to have understood it, and make clear what it is before they went to the polls and raised these issues with these politicians that are running for office for the presidency and their local Senate races, because that's where the rubber meets the road, in the House and the Senate. What we are hearing over and over from utilities is that they don't have the technologies that they need to get it all to zero carbon. And so, in our view, this bill really takes on Challen, Rich Powell, Executive Director of the Conservation of Clean Energy Group's Clear Path Actions, told reporters during a Monday's press conference call on the bill. The Trump administration is traditionally shied away from demonstrating projects, a strategy that top sorts of funding pilots under the belief that the deployment should be left to the private sector. But this bill moves away from that approach and the idea that the federal government can spur rapid decarbonization through research and funding alone. The legislation package would call for deploying more than two new nuclear reactors by 2025 and another by 2035, five carbon capture projects by 2025, split between coal and natural gas. That's exactly what I thought they'd be coming with. To ensure at least two of each fuel, five grid-scale storage projects would include different technologies by 2025, and four geographical diverse geothermal projects by 2025. There's a real focus on demonstration projects, which really stands out as both really impactful and also sorts out a novel relationship to hear the conversation that has been in the last few years, said Towson. To make a long story short, ladies and gentlemen, this is bullshit. The sun comes up over everybody's roof every day. People don't have the choice in regulated markets because the large-scale utility companies like the Duke Energies of this world, the ODUs of this world, and I can go on and on naming these large-scale utility companies that control those market share, the markets in the deeper south, they are basically oil and gas companies. They are the ones who are benefiting from the being a regulated market. They do not want a deregulated market because renewable energy companies cannot flourish in a regulated market because they need to be able to get a return on investment. For example, in Greensboro, North Carolina, it's an African-American church there. I beat the drum on this platform around this issue, and we discussed that. And off the top of my head, I forgot the minister, but he, in fact, was working with an advocacy group out of Warren County, North Carolina, and the group raised $20,000. They paid for a solar system be put on the roof of the church's center, visitor center. And they were selling this energy to the members of the congregation at 5 cents, where Duke was billing the people at 11 cents. Duke Energy sued the church, made them take this stuff down, but the long and short of this thing went all the way through the courts up to the North Carolina Supreme Court within a year and a half, which is unheard of. And what happened with that was the take it down because it is a regulated market. I'm trying to give examples why I read this bill so people can understand what the hell I'm talking about here on this platform today and how politics plays into this. Now, Tom Steiner, who dropped out, when you looked at his platform on renewable energy and his track record on that, he was the best candidate as it relates to that. When we began to look at policies, but when we began to look at name brand, name recognition, relationships, and who knows who, and those endorsements, you are from South Carolina. Everybody understands the Thanks. E. Clyburn, who hails from Sumter, South Carolina. And not until Congressman Clyburn endorsed Biden did you talk about the resurrection. His campaign was dead, ladies and gentlemen. Bernie Sanders spoke and went to one of his Biden's headquarters and took a casket. And nor did he have any money. Endorsement, and as they're referring to him on MSNBC as the kingmaker, started this whole change in where people was, and by him winning the South Carolina primary, and the black vote was the backbone to this thing. But let's look at Congressman Clyburn's district. You had the biggest fiasco in the nation with an $11 billion overcost run to build a nuclear power plant in Sumter. The Public Service Commission in the state of South Carolina raised the electricity rates on the ratepayers in the state of South Carolina, my home state, 9 times until the people couldn't take it no more. They said, no, we're not going for this. So they came up and said, we need to get rid of all the public service commissioners in the state who voted on this thing to approve these ratepayers. Then when you look at the state legislature, it's one thing to talk about the discrimination and racism. Well, we know that's alive and well on both sides of the ticket. Because when we begin to look at what has gone on the Democratic side of the ticket, and you look at all of the benefits that the renewable energy sector has garnered from the Sunshine Identity Initiative that President Obama put forth through his administration, and you look at all of the thousands of jobs that have been created, guess who brings it to the bottom of the barrel when it comes to getting those job opportunities? African-American youth. These solar installation and design companies, these renewable energy companies, they're not going to our historically black colleges and universities. Nor is the workforce development training dollars being programmed in pilot programs for low and moderate income communities of color, and specifically the African-American community, because every community of color ain't looking out for the black community. Because when it's all said and done, the Hispanic population has outpaced us in terms of their population growth into this country, and they're now, under the white population, the largest voting bloc in this country. But our folk, we've been in the game a little longer, and we're pretty damn savvy and sophisticated on how to vote. But when the black media does not speak around these issues, our people don't know what to vote on and how to vote on. You have to look at these bills. You have to understand what's coming down the pike. Now, expecting the private sector to be able to take a big risk on clean energy technologies, especially given the uncertainty of long-term policy environment, it is not really realistic and any certainty, not in line with what we have heard from companies, he said. Now, that's going back to Mr. Towson, who indicated there's a real focus on demonstration projects. It is important that the United States be the leader in advanced nuclear technology, particularly as China and Russia are surging ahead in the advanced and small reactor space, Powell said. The bill would also address nuclear barriers to carbon capture and yield thermal by including a focus on natural gas plants, retrofits, and expanding geographic footprints of geothermal pilots eastwards. They could hugely expand the footprint for geothermal, so you can start thinking about doing a lot of this east of the Mississippi, which has not been traditionally where these projects are located, said Powell. That could bring renewable energy to a lot of parts of the country where a lot of renewable resources are a little challenged. It ain't no little challenge, it's legislatively challenged because they're in regulated markets, including technologies like nuclear, leaving the room for natural gas and coal under the promise of carbon capture has allowed the bill to garner support. This is bullshit. They need to be focusing on wind and solar. We don't have a whole bunch of time left, ladies and gentlemen. Climate change is real. You still have the same wealthy oil and gas families who control these markets and stockholders with their hands in the cookie jar. This energy bill that I'm looking at here ain't dealing with no renewables too much. This stuff is all about trying to say we're going to have clean fossil fuels to keep going on the planet. The planet has already let us know. Did you hear what happened in Nashville? This is being brought on by climate change. It's just like the governor of the Bahamas who spoke truth to power when he said, look, we must build community solar grid systems to withstand these Category 5 hurricanes that's hitting the Caribbean. He said, we are not the one creating the problem. We are victims of the problem because of the leading manufacturer industrial nations of the world, China, U.S., Canada, where the manufacturing is going on. This is the reality of what we're dealing with, ladies and gentlemen. Now, when you look at including technologies, as I indicated, like nuclear, leaving the room for natural gas, coal under the promise of the capture, carbon capture, under the promise of carbon capture, you have to read very carefully, has allowed the bill to garner support from a wide range of industry groups, including the Nuclear Energy Institute, coal advocacy groups, American Power, the American Gas Association, and Edison Electric. We believe the most realistic way to address greenhouse gas emissions is through a technology-centric strategy. To be successful, such a strategy must be based on sustained investments as well as allow adequate time to develop and deploy the technologies. Hell, gas and oil have had the largest market share of the wholesale market for the last 50 damn years. This is why we are where we are today. This is the issue. Okay. We believe the most realistic way to address greenhouse emissions is through a technology-centric strategy. Now, I just read that. When you read this, you will understand what is going on. It's just like Brother Malcolm said years ago, we've been hoodwinked. Bill barriers, solar and renewable storage groups express more tentative support. Though these groups support a lot of the bill's efforts, they would like to see the tax credits added for solar storage and electric vehicles. We do think additional legislative work is needed on the tax and climate policy, among other energy-related issues. Eric Duncan, Vice President of the Congressional Effort for Solar Industry Trade Association, said in an email statement. But the group appreciates the bill's support for short, mid, and long-term innovation in the solar industry, as well as its focus on cybersecurity, grid security, and energy storage, she added. Well, where is the damn diversity and inclusion programs coming out of the Solar Industry Trade Association? I've been trying to get somebody from SEIA to come on this platform for 4 years, and their talk at public conventions that's hosted by, quote-unquote, the black energy groups that's supposed to speak for us, where black folks who work for the utility company who scared of their jobs ain't going to say nothing. The HBCU collaboration group, which I have been working with, my organization, we have put together a green economic 5-year sustainability economic development program for attempted for all of our historically black colleges and universities. We've attempted to work with one of our HBCUs in the local market area who looked at the plan, thought it was great, but they're going to write their own, but they don't have the expertise or the staffing to do it. But after making our presentation to them, yours truly has requested a specific institution to sign a what is known as a NDA. It's called a Notice of Disclosure Agreement. So they cannot utilize our information because we made it very clear to them that they did not have to pay us to put this together. We could write ourselves in administrative. They chose to go the other route because black folks, we still believe that the white man's ice is colder and that we can't provide and do the same professional work that anybody else, even though we work in white companies every day and we're the backbone of those companies and the brain trust. But this is how we are looked upon because we've been socially engineered as black folks to think that our minds aren't as sharp as everybody else's minds out here in this game. You know, and it is a sad commentator, but this is how we've been socially engineered, the same way we've been socially engineered to run to the polls and vote and get nothing in return. Now, the bill went on to say the Energy Storage Association similarly expressed support for certain aspects of the bills, such as inclusion of the better energy storage, which encourages grid-scale storage deployment, but called for a tax credit addition for the resource. In order to realize a modern clean grid, it is critical that the Senate take immediate action to provide commensurate incentives for energy storage, and it has with other clean energy technologies. Enacting a standalone energy tax credit would benefit all stakeholders, the group said in the statement. The American Association did not respond to the request or comment, but through the tax credit are an important piece of decarbonization legislation. This package has a lot of really important pieces in it, said Towson. We certainly don't view the particular focus of this legislation as an impediment or a reason not to take up what we think is really a good bill. Environmental and energy efficiency groups have been more than critical, however, though the Natural Resources Defense Council supports many aspects of the bill, the package would undermine bedrock environmental laws, weaken public lands, protect and ramp up dirty energy fueling climate change. That's unacceptable, said Alexander Adams, Senior Director of the Federal Affairs of the NRDC. That's the Natural Resource Defense Council. These people know what they're talking about. Innovation and the R&D, of course, have a role, but is it urgently needed right now? Goes beyond research that will have payoffs far down the road, said Sierra Club Pierce. We need action on deploying and proving clean energy technologies that are reducing emissions today. The most direct way to do that would be advancing the clean energy tax incentives for technologies including solar, on and offshore wind, energy storage, energy efficiency, and electric vehicles. This is what it's about, ladies and gentlemen, and this is where the money and the technologies and the job creation is being created. And even inside of that, with these people, where is an agenda for an economic development plan for the black community? The only one I know that has been developed by Dr. Lillian Abrams of Peer Consultants, who is a pioneer in environmental engineering, who started her firm here in Washington, D.C. in 1978 with three employees. She now employs over 200 engineers and architects in this arena with five offices nationally and two offices internationally. And we have been through hell and high water with our historically black college leadership just trying to get data from them so we can help these schools. We need to go to the Hill, and we need to have Congress call our HBCU presidents to the room and mandate that they implement this five-year green economic development sustainability plan. When it's all said and done, that's how you're going to have to get something done, because when you get trying to get black folks to listen to other black folks who know what the hell they're talking about, but because their egos don't allow nobody to listen to nobody but themselves, the black college presidents, because they basically don't listen to nobody but each other. This is a problem, ladies and gentlemen. We call it like we see it here on this platform, Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on black America. This group has basically targeted what needs to be done. Of additional concerns in the fact that the bill eliminates the provision from bipartisan efficiency bill that would have updated building efficiency codes. The codes would drive enormous efficiency gains in new homes across the country, making future housing stock more affordable and more sustainable. Ben Evans, Vice President of the Alliance of Safe Energy, said in a statement. That's a big opportunity. We will continue working on our Republican and Democratic supporters to get these provisions added to the bill. It's clear that the package is not everything we need the deal to be with climate goals, but it's a real substantial foundation upon which to build the foundation that also is a bipartisan. CES President Bob Prusecki told reporters during the Monday webinar. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know how many people are talking about these issues, but after black folks have gone and put Biden's over the top, I'd like to know what his platform is. I'd like to know what Bernie Sanders' platform is, because they seem they're the ones that's going to end up with this Democratic nomination. And how will they address the issue of regulated versus deregulated markets, the discrimination that's going on in the solar and wind industry where they're hiring no African Americans, the workforce development funding that should be targeted to communities of color all over this country, and specifically programs to be started certification training programs to be studied at our historically black colleges and universities. This is a must, ladies and gentlemen. We have already given what we needed to do. Give. They wanted our vote. We voted for them. But this personality game, because the preacher said, go vote for so-and-so, or because Clyde Byrne said, oh, I know Joe. We know Joe. Hey, that don't get it. If the people got to pay, keep paying these increases in South Carolina, and you can't even build a solar farm in South Carolina, and I know several deals of black landowners who want to build large-scale solar farms on family land, and because it's a regulated market and you can't get no more than 2 to 3.5 cents from the utility company, you can't even, it's not even feasible to break ground for the project. And we're talking about real economic development, because a 20-megawatt farm, and you identify the right tech companies and off are these cannabis growers who need this energy that you can sell this energy to, you can create the type of wealth that will give black folk the type of economic independence that they can move forward. We have the land. Our schools are strategically located to build large-scale electric vehicle charging hubs off interstates that some of this, the highways even run through. The land that our HBCUs are sitting on, because those highways were not there when those schools were established back in the 1800s. I hope I'm saying something that's making sense to people out there. I don't know. You know, sometimes I come behind this, get behind this mic, and we are here because we're talking about programs that should be, it should be that, as they say, it's a no-brainer. But this is what we're dealing with. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I am looking right now for my podcast. And I'm looking to make sure that our studio, that we're still on the air while we are doing what we're doing here, which is trying to bring you news that you can definitely use here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. So we are still here over the World Wide Web, over Blog Talk Radio. Now, you can chime in on this conversation by calling 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Now, we're going to take a pause for the calls, and we're going to be right back, and we'll be talking about who brings you this show. We'll take another commercial break as soon as we come back from our short break here on Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Life is a song worth singing. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life.
singing like a child. Singing.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Now, we have covered this energy bill. It's very, very clear that the gas and oil and nuclear lobbyists on the Hill that covers the, and believe me, ladies and gentlemen, they got as much power as the banking industry, okay? And they have a large influence on the politics of this nation. So let's don't get this twisted. All you got to do is look at who contributes what to whom's campaign. Now, there are a number of people in this game that's a political game. Bloomberg was one of those individuals who has contributed a lot of money. He spent over $500 million in this election. And he has not gotten the results that he's looking for, because folks who live in Alabama and Mississippi, those folk, they've got family who migrated to New York City years ago. And when people were being harassed by that Stop and Frisk law that they had out in New York, which they were giving black folks hell with up in the city, with those stopping and harassing young black folks and black men in the city, and they're getting records that they didn't need. People didn't forget that, but they forget that where the people came from. Those black folks living in New York, 90% of them, they're from if you examine their roots, they might have been born and raised in New York. You check and find out where their families came from, ladies and gentlemen. You find out they came from the South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee. And they migrated because they couldn't find work during the 50s and the 60s. It was called the Great Migration. So folks got a short memory. But I am a living example of that. I was a young kid growing up in Dillon, South Carolina, right near Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And as a small kid watching the train leave my hometown, all the young folk got on the train. They were going north during the summer, trying to include yours truly. As soon as I got old enough to get out those tobacco fields, I was on that train heading north to Washington, D.C., to live with my aunt so I could get me a summer job working here in Washington, D.C., up here in the new up south, New Mississippi. So this is real. We cannot forget where we come from. Nobody else does. Other people, ethnicities, don't do that. We're the only group of people asked to forget what we've been through in this damn country and just do what I want you to do when I want you to do it for my convenience. Now, if you join this show on a regular basis, you know that this show is brought to you by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative. Now, the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative serves as a financial blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market solar installation and design companies, to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, to utilize black-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the unemployment of black men and women locally and nationally to educate the black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the black community through shows such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on black America. Okay? Now, it's also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSHBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. You can get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. That's positivechangepc.com. Go over to our GoFundMe link. You can click on that and you'll see that we have been beating the drum attempting to get funding to take this show and get it on Radio One, which is owned by Dr. Kathy Hughes, Radio One Network, here in the Washington, D.C. market area. It would be aired over 1450 a.m. We are still pushing to see how we can get this thing up and moving. One thing I do know, if you are speaking truth to power in this country and the truth that you speak to puts you in a position where you're not wanted by either side. Because when I begin to look at the Democratic Party and look at the attitudes of black elected officials and white elected officials in the Democratic Party, I don't see a hell of a lot of difference than I see from the Republican Party. Someone said something to me a long time ago, and it stuck. They said, "Look, man, the Democrats pimp the poor, especially the African American community. They pimp us every time when it comes to these elections, it pushes right on out the vote. Oh, make us feel that it's, oh, your ancestors died for the right to vote." Yeah, that's true too. But we got to have something other more substantive than you just coming to tell me what my ancestors went through, because we still catching hell here. When you begin to look at the lack of access to capital, the credit issues, when you begin to look at the constant competition with white women for grants in the nonprofit sector to run programs in the African-American communities, you will find that most of the programs that are being run in the black community are supposed to be upward mobility programs don't even have black folks running them. See, everybody's figured out how they can manipulate our community, how they can go get the funding and do what they want to do to get their narrative over, because they're supposed to know what's best for us than us. I have a problem with that. I have a serious problem with that. But that's the arrogance and racism that is embedded in the American culture. As Brother Malcolm said, this is just as American as apple pie. Now, I can say what I'm saying on this show because I have no commercial sponsors. Talking to the person who sponsors this show every week right now, we pay the cost to be the boss every week to bring you this show. And you can speak the truth to the power of the black folk and they can agree with you and won't send you a damn dime. This is the type of scenario and mindset that we are, our people are under, because we think going out on the weekend and having a good time and the next time we're going to have a good time is all that matters. That don't mean nothing. When we begin to look at the division of wealth in this country and what it's going to take for black folks not to be a sixth-class citizen in the United States of America, because as we know, the Hispanic community has already outgrown us through the immigration process. We know when it comes to the African American, we are by ourselves. Even our African brothers and sisters that come here, they come here and play this system for their own benefit, and they could care less than anything about us. It's sad, but it's real. A lot of them that's here, not that well, I'm condemning all of the African brothers and sisters. No, I'm not doing that. I'm just saying what we deal with, the way we are pitted against each other in this marketplace for jobs. And if you don't have the ability to create your own business and your own infrastructure for development around public policy that's going to create career business opportunities for your own folks, you in a hell of a lot of trouble in this country. This country is based on businesses. That's one thing that 45 did. If you are in business and you know how to play the game, you can play the game if you got something to play the game with. Then we got the issue of black folks who went to white colleges and universities and have forgot where the hell they came from, and a lot of them think that they're better than the black folks who did not go to historically black colleges and universities, and we put these Negroes in front as leadership of our historically black colleges, and then they go hire black folks who did not go to those historically black colleges. They hire black folks who went to historically white colleges, and they come in to our institutions and run those institutions with the least attitude toward the students that they serve every day. Stepping on somebody's toes, because I got my steel-toed boots on and I wear size 13. If you'd like to join this conversation, you can call 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. We're going to go and look at what's happening with Duke Energy in the state of North Carolina as it relates to Duke settles with ChargePoint expanding options. Duke settles with ChargePoint expanding options for $76 million North Carolina EV electric vehicle pilot program. Now, you'll be able to find this information by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Please go over to our news and events tab and scroll down. This particular article was written by Mr. Robert Walton. It was published on the 3rd of March, 2020, and also in Utility Dive. Duke Energy has made modifications to its proposed electric vehicle EV pilot and on Friday filed a settlement with the North Carolina Utilities Commission, the NCUC, that resolves competitive issues raised by ChargePoint in an earlier filing. The state wants to see 80,000 zero-emission vehicles on its roads by the year 2025. It is now 2020. You're talking about 80,000 electric vehicles in the state of North Carolina alone. That's the goal. And Duke says its program is essential to reaching that goal. The agreement with Duke allows for greater customer choice of equipment, software, and pricing structures. ChargePoint Vice President of Customer Solutions, Charlotte and sales told Utility Dive. The utility has also offered to scale back its 76 million EV offerings to accommodate objections from the NCUC public staff, which acts as a customer advocacy arm in the state of North Carolina. Duke Energy's pilot program consists of seven individual programs, including 1,000 rebates for residential charges. You get that's a $1,000 rebate if you put a residential charger in, including for fleet equipment and electric school buses charging initiative. Modifications to the pilot have brought on a broad board charge point, which operates the nation's largest charging network and has opposed the plan over concerns it limits customers' ability to choose their preferred charging equipment. But the NCUC public staff, in a proposed order, told regulators it stands by its previous objections that the set of programs is too large to be considered as a proof of a concept. As well, it intended as Duke proposals may be, it is inaccurate to call the proposed program pilots, public staff said in the proposed order. Duke's proposed offering focus on EV charging management, transit electrification, and expansion of public charging. According to the customer advocacy group, Duke's proposed electric transportation programs are designed to obtain infrastructure-related data that is likely already publicly available or will be available within the next year or 18 months from other utilities and jurisdictions. The data includes load patterns related to EV charging and the impact of managing charging and how managing charging can shape load patterns and customer charging behavior from the public. At best, only residential EV charging and free EV charging programs arguably qualify for the pilot, while other programs are not reflective of a large potential offering or merely capital projects. Public staff said there are also critical omissions from those programs that would support their approval, including experimental rate designs and data collections that cannot be achieved otherwise. Public staff's arguments are really that they do see it as a pilot proposal. They see it as a real program that we misnamed. Lang Reynolds, Duke Director of Electrification Strategy, told Utility Dive, their opposition seems to be somewhat procedural. We think there are grounds for proposing it as a pilot, given that there is no real framework for EV investment as a utility in North Carolina necessary to gather data. We did offer some areas where we are willing to scale back on level two side of things, Reynolds said. Seeking to address the public staff commission, Duke's own proposed order offers to remove programs that involve multifamily charging stations and public level two charging stations that utilities said would result in a decrease of approximately $4.1 million from the overall cost. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a very interesting piece. We're not going to be able to finish everything today. We got on our soapbox today, and we wanted to tie the politics into these articles that's relevant to what is going on now. One thing is for sure. Our historically black colleges and universities do not have an economic sustainability plan in place. Without one, you're in trouble. And this is where we find ourselves. You have to have a plan. We here at the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, working in conjunction with peer consultants, have put together such a green five-year economic development sustainability plan. Anyone out there that would be interested in this, they can contact us by emailing us at info@positivechangepc.com. That's info@positivechangepc.com, and we'll get back to you. But I will let you know right now, before we release anything, you will be signing a NDA, which stands for Notice of Disclosure Agreement, because we're not sending information out to be taken and used, and peer consultants and the Positive Change Purchase Corporation not be able to benefit from an intellectual property that has been written by two I consider geniuses, Mr. Travis Wallace and Mrs. Raina Povisa, who work for peer consultants, who young PhDs who put this package together. And we are charged with the marketing, advocacy, outreach, and trying to raise the necessary funding for this initiative to be launched at with our historically black colleges and universities. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed this show today. I hope we brought you news that you can definitely use. And until next week, we say, go in peace here on Soul and Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America, because we know that when it's all said and done, it's not what you say, it's what you do. And the name of the game is you got to get it done, because it's only thing that counts. Everything else, as we say, is conversation. So on that note, till next week, don't meet me here, beat me here. And you can log on to our website at positivechangepc.com, and you'll be able to hear this show again. And please refer people to our website at positivechangepc.com. Until next week, we say go in peace.
Here's a song worth singing.
I can too.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
I got you.
Sing it.